You're listening to SBS On The Money with Ricardo Gonçalves.
Hi everyone, it is your daily 10-minute business and finance news wrap for this Tuesday, the 7th of January 2025. The Australian share market rose today, the S&P ASX 200 up 0.3%. We'll have the details and more with Chris Weston from Pepperstone. But first, building approvals fell 3.6% in November, according to the Bureau of Statistics. That is still up 3.2% over the year. But is Australia building enough homes to meet population growth? For that, Raina Bosch spoke with Mee Bui, an economist at AMP.
First of all, falling building approval is never a good thing, you know, because we still have positive net migration and positive population growth. We do want increase in building approvals every single month. But of course, keep in mind that the number of building approval can be very noisy month to month. And we did see a broad-based decline in building approvals, both in both houses and apartments in November. That was negative 3.6% in total. However, this came on the back of an upward revision last month of 5.2%. This came on the back of two very strong months in apartment approval counts in the previous 2 months. So I wouldn't take this as a very, very negative signal at all. In fact, throughout 2024, we did see building approvals trending up from a pace of just around 160,000 per year to now it's running at roughly 180,000 per annum.
Are we building enough houses and apartments, dwellings in general, to keep up with population growth?
In our opinion, we haven't been building enough houses and apartments in Australia to keep up with population growth. And we haven't been building enough since 2022, since we had a large increase after COVID in net migration at all. If you look at the number of units approvals, right now we're only building roughly half of the pace that we were building, back in the apartment boom of 2016 to 2019. And on our estimates, Australia should be building or approving at about 260,000 dwelling units per year, whereas even with the increases throughout the past year, we're only approving about 180,000 per year, and that's about 80K per annum shortfall. And again, there has been a chronic undersupply in Australia. So this underbuilding has been getting worse in the past few months and even throughout the last year.
In the note that you released today, you mentioned that completions and approvals weren't moving at the same pace. What does this say?
So naturally, the number of dwellings completed is always lower than the number of dwellings approved because there are many things that can happen during construction. Maybe you have a shoddy builder that actually go under throughout the construction period. However, if you actually look at the trend since post-COVID, since 2022, we've had a massive rise in inflation in the price of both building materials, those, say, cement or tiles or things that are used during constructions, and you also see a massive rise in prices of services of buildings. So that's the price for actually hiring builders and tradies to do things. So because of this, the abandonment rate for a lot of construction projects in both houses and especially units have actually shot up. And that means that there was a large backlog in dwellings approved that were never built in the past 2 or 3 years. So this basically reflects the fact that, the construction landscape hasn't been good in Australia. We do have a shortage of both building materials as well as personnel to actually build more houses in Australia. Some of this might even be attributed to the fact that we've had a large rise in infrastructure projects at many different states, for example, Victoria, and that is somewhat crowding out tradies and people in the construction industry towards the government projects rather than building projects.
Now, you did mention the post-COVID migration boom. Obviously, things have slowed slightly since then. How do you see this supply issue progressing into 2025?
So if you believe what the government targets, the government now sees a slow easing in net migration to a pace of about 340,000 people this financial year and roughly 255,000 in the next financial year. So this is actually a positive for supply and demand, the supply and demand imbalance in Australia. However, if you look at the statistic, net migration actually came in about 50,000 people stronger than expected in the 23 and 24 financial year. That's number one. And number two, dwelling completions are still remaining well below the government's target of about 240,000 per annum. That's in the National Housing Accord that was set out in the next 5 years. So that little increase in building approvals and that little decline in net migration is still not enough to balance out the supply and demand shortfall in the next few months. We don't expect this issue to actually be resolved in the next 1 or 2 years. It probably takes longer than that, just given the large backlogs of building approvals as well as completions that we have seen.
That's me, Bowie, there speaking with Raina Bosch.
Now, Market Day on the SBS On The Money podcast.
The Australian share market rose today. The S&P ASX 200 up 0.34% to 8,285. With more, Raina Bosch spoke with Chris Weston, the head of research at Pepperstone.
We're following in the leads from Wall Street. It was an interesting session over there, but certainly, yeah, we've underperformed Japan. Japan's having an absolute flyer as investors come back from their holidays. And yeah, that market's up over 2% at the moment. China's down a little bit, but yeah, we're holding on. It's been a pretty whippy ride. If you look at intraday chart of the ASX 200, you know, we've pushed up towards 7,300. We sort of just pulled back a little bit and it's, you know, been up and down. But we're up about 0.2% at the moment. We've got about 70% of the stocks are higher on the day. We're led by techs, communication services and healthcare. And on the bottom of the pole, you've got materials weighed down a little bit, perhaps by some of the tensions that are rising around China and Canada and the US and certainly Trump's tariff situation. So something we're watching closely, but certainly a bit of a whippy ride. And again, look, you know, volumes are very light once again. I mean, we're still waiting for people to really come back in, that full participation to come. We're about 20% of the volume that we'd see over the last 30 days. So certainly volumes are light, and that's just sort of moving the market around a little bit there.
Yeah, Chris, you touched on it briefly there between Trump tariff talks, discussion about paring them back, the US adding China 10 cent to its list of Chinese military companies. And then, of course, we had Justin Trudeau stepping down as Canadian PM. Any market implications?
Absolutely, huge implications. I think the idea, first of all, that was speculated in the Washington Post, that Donald Trump is not necessarily looking at universal tariffs across the board, but universal tariffs on select goods or critical goods. That was then later poo-pooed by Donald Trump. He pushed that back out. And that's not going to surprise anyone as well. He still needs that element of being hardball, that he's going to go in with the hardest possible situation. That's his leverage. And if obviously every nation all comes up against the negotiation table, believes that, you know, that he's thinking that it could be a much lower situation, then he loses that credibility, that loses that edge. So, you know, that was certainly a prevalent situation. I still think most people on the street believe that the tariffs that he campaigned on won't going in that form, but he obviously needs people to believe that he is good for that. And I think, yeah, we will see front-loaded tariffs coming through. Where I think it becomes really interesting is the retaliation side. That's where it could get, that's where I don't believe it's fully priced into markets. So we obviously have tariffs being priced in across currencies and into various other markets, but certainly the idea about what's going to be the retaliation. Now, the idea that Justin Trudeau is going to step down, it's not going to change things too much. But what Canada are doing in now is there has been some speculation that Canada will actually release, before Donald Trump's inauguration on the 20th of January, a list of goods that are going to come through and be impacted as retaliatory measures back on the US. And I think that's quite an aggressive situation if we do see that. The idea that Tencent then could come up on their blacklist, the Pentagon's blacklist, look, I think Tencent's going to refute this one pretty hard and say, look, we don't believe that we belong on that list. But again, I mean, it's this tit for tat, and it's the retaliation from different nations when they come to negotiations that I think could get is what markets could de-risk on. And so watch this space at the moment. But certainly, Tencent stock is down pretty hard in China, in Hong Kong, and they're a major market constituent of the Hang Seng, which is why we're seeing an underperformance there. But as I say, I think the idea here is that Donald Trump is not going to get all his way. He's going to go in hard, but it's the retaliation. What measures are going to be put through? That's where we get the tit for tat. That's where markets will get nervous. And we're seeing signs of that today.
Elsewhere, back home, we've got the CPI indicator that's dropping tomorrow, retail sales on Thursday. How's the market feeling about the local interest rate implications of this and a potential cut sometimes?
Well, the market seems I was going to say very confident, but pretty confident that we're going to get a cut on the 18th of February from the Reserve Bank. I can say that because if you look at interest rate futures, Australian swaps, they're pricing about a 70% chance that we do get that cut on the 18th of February. Now, I think there's a million ways to slice and dice tomorrow's inflation number. They are very, very important because now they incorporate a lot of the services into that number, which will feed into the Q4 CPI calculation that comes through on the 29th of January. And of course, that's going to be the factor that the RBA will really decide whether or not they need to cut rates, and they've got the credibility to do so. We've got an employment number, which again, comes out on the 16th. Some people will be looking at that very closely. The RBA will be. And then there's other metrics, like you say, the retail sales number. But I think this monthly CPI print could see some volatility in the Aussie dollar. The question is how does that feed through into the RBA statement of monetary projections? Remember that they are looking for inflation on a headline basis to be at 3% for December. So this number here will feed through into people's run rate. Is it tracking below that number? In which case, therefore, that could give them some scope, that increased confidence, which is thereafter, to cut rates in February. Obviously, if we do see a much hotter than expected number, then I think people will say that the idea of cutting in such a strong labour market at the moment is still a bit premature. Perhaps April, perhaps May is still the point of conjecture there.
You mentioned some volatility in the Aussie. That's obviously still tracking at a near two-year low. How is all of this playing out on currency markets?
Well, the Aussie is still pretty heavy. I mean, we saw it trade up into 63 cents when that news from the Washington Post broke that perhaps, we're not going to see such an aggressive or universal tariff situation. And we saw some risk coming back into the market. The Aussie dollar pushed up into 63 cents, just broad dollar weakness in that situation. But traders have sold into that and we've come back a little bit, sort of repositioning back into the US dollar. And I think that's the right trade. But generally speaking, people are looking at the US dollar at the moment and saying, what happens with tariffs? Because everyone's expecting tariffs to be a US dollar positive, and therefore, that could take us down much lower in the Australian dollar. I still think the key for the Australian dollar, whether we get a pushback below 62 cents, is really what happens in the Chinese yuan. We've seen signs that the Chinese are happy to allow a depreciation to offset the tariffs that are going to come on them. But it really depends on the magnitude and the speed of that. But if they were to, when they know the facts, which obviously won't happen until January the 20th, if they were to allow a more steady depreciation in a one-way trend, I think that will weigh on the Australian dollar just because its sympathy as being a China proxy there. So I think that's one of the biggest factors we need to watch.
Finally, Chris, where are you seeing the opportunities for investors at the moment?
Well, I still think tech's the place to be. I mean, whether we're looking, certainly in the US tech side, when we're seeing tech Australia, ASX tax, I know there's not a million tech stocks in Australia, but certainly that's where I still think that we need to be looking. For me, the opportunity is still to be in the Mag 7 plays in the US. They worked perfectly in 2024. That's where we're still seeing the earnings growth in 2025, far more than the other 493 S&P companies. Yeah, NVIDIA's trading at all-time highs. Buying at all-time highs in 2024 was a great trade. I'm still happy to be in the Meg 7 plays. I still think that's where we're going to see the momentum. I still think that's where we're seeing the earnings growth. I still think that's where the innovation's coming through. And I think the earnings season that's going to come through on January the 15th in the US, I think that is going to show a lot of these hyperscale business, we've already seen it from Microsoft, are going to be front-loading and then ordering some of these AI names. So I'm still very much, I think that's where we're going to get the outperformance in tech. Mag 7, I think that's the play to be.
That is Chris Weston there from Pepperstone speaking about the day's rise in the share market. Don't forget, if you enjoy this podcast, to give it a rating on Spotify and Apple Podcasts and to click on subscribe to be alerted to whenever the podcast is out. I'm Ricardo Gonsalves. Speak to you soon.
This SBS On The Money podcast is provided for informational purposes only. The content on this podcast should not be understood as constituting advice or a recommendation. It is not personal advice and does not consider your personal circumstances or objectives. You should contact a licensed professional before making any financial decision.